Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. So, hey, Road Warrior, welcome back.
Well, thank you, sir. It's good to be back.
And this, by the way, is Shane Vanderhurt, and I got my colleague, Brian.
I'm colleague now.
Colleague, yes.
I like that.
Comic relief,
yeah,
sidekick.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I like the colleague.
Colleague,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, like you've been a Road Warrior last couple weeks.
I have. And I'll be back on the road again quite a little bit in May, and so you'll have to fly the ship solo here in a couple of weeks. You're probably excited. Certainly the listeners are excited. Your colleague is going to be gone.
The listeners could be saying, no, not just Shane. No, I'll probably have somebody come in and as a guest co-host, because it's always fun to have somebody else in the studio with you.
They don't want to just listen to me bloviate
about stuff.
You won't miss me?
I'll miss you, of course.
But your aim is improving, right? Yeah.
Oh.
What have you been up to while I've been gone?
Well, dentistry work this week. It's been, yeah. I have dental insurance is ending the end of this month. So everything that I've possibly needed to have done, I've been getting done this week. So that's been a lot of fun, especially somebody tried calling me. It wasn't yesterday, but the day before, and I actually had the top of my roof of my mouth and my upper gums and the bottom gums were still numb and my tongue was numb. And it's like, I don't think I'm going to be talking on the phone.
I could talk on
the phone, but they wouldn't be able to understand me.
We needed to get you on the air right about that.
that
would have been fun. That would have been fun.
Yeah, possibly.
Hurt.
Possibly maybe make sense for once. Who knows? We have a special guest on the line with us.
Are you sure he's still there?
Hopefully. I read his article. I can't remember exactly when he wrote it, but it's entitled Naive Young Evangelicals and the Illiberal DNA of the Gay Rights Movement.
Now, illiberal.
Illiberal. That's a word that you don't necessarily hear a lot. He writes, it's Matthew Lee Anderson. He's the founder and lead writer of Mirror Orthodoxy and the author of Earth and Vessels. And then his bio on his website says, and among other stuff. That's kind of how my bio could go too.
Good morning, Matthew.
So, hey, welcome, Matthew. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. You guys are like the click and clack, conservative talk radio. I think that's how I'm going to think of you guys from here on out.
Awesome.
Are we supposed to take that as a compliment?
I'm going to, whether it was intended as a compliment or not. So,
it's high praise. It's the only good thing NPR ever gave the world.
Okay, awesome. Awesome.
Right.
That's a joke, by the way. Some NPR things.
Yeah, I do too. Don
Gagne
he's
a friend
good.
Of ours.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I just have to ask you, Matthew, because this seems to be the question du jour in the presidential campaign. Not that you're running for president or anything, but would you attend a gay wedding?
How do you like that, right out of the gun, Matthew?
Wow.
First shot.
Good heavens. No softballs, no lead-ins, nothing.
Boom.
And this is how we roll, Matthew.
Boom.
And now you want to see how the presidential candidates feel when they.
Would I attend a gay wedding? I'd want to know a lot more detail.
Okay.
About it.
Okay.
So, one of the lines that was overlooked in all of that mess that Ross Douthat said, columnist for the New York Times, was that he would be a lot. He'd likely attend the gay wedding by two people who had no Christian commitments or, like, claim no Christian commitments at all, but would be a lot less comfortable attending a gay union by those who claimed to have Christian commitments.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Which is a really interesting approach and something that I share similar intuitions there, and I'm not sure that I've worked all this out myself.
Sure. Me neither.
But there is a sense in which I think if I have two friends who are gay who claim no Christian commitments at all, my attendance there doesn't have the same kind of significance as my attendance at a union where, say, they're saying the words of the Nicene Creed
sure.
and doing something that I think is directly invalidating uh-huh. The words and authority of Scripture. And so I do share the intuition that, like, I probably would not go, paradoxically, to a, pseudo-Christian, a claimed Christian
right.
gay union. But I might, but I would probably go to a gay wedding of two people who, had no Christian commitments at all.
Especially maybe if you were trying to witness to them and you're developing a relationship with them. And, I mean, my thought in the whole matter is, well, for one thing, I hate the question in the presidential campaign, so I'm sorry I asked it of you.
Thank you, Shane, because this whole thing is a distraction,
right? And kind of I was kind of asking you in jest, but I thought you're bringing up some. This is good to talk about because it's amazing, kind of the blowback I've been seeing on social media regarding this question. How some evangelicals are using this as a
litmus test
now. If they said yes, and gosh, I can't vote for that person. And I'm thinking, how does this qualify somebody for presidents? What are your thoughts? I mean, when you first heard this question being asked of Marco Rubio, what were you thinking? And then we'll get into your article. I know you didn't write about this, but
I mean, head desk. Like, I hate the question
yeah.
a lot. It's the kind of principle that we establish that signals support or opposition to larger trends.
Mm-hmm.
But these questions are prudential questions that have to take into a lot of different factors in the actual situation.
Right.
The kind of, we don't have within the Christian world as much careful reflection about what it means to be complicit in certain activities
mm-hmm.
and what participation in certain activities like entails for us. And from my standpoint, we need to do a lot more theoretical reflection about that because, there is a sense in which attending a ceremony, if I have two gay friends, who are getting married, they're going to know everything that I've written and said about the subject. And they're inviting me as someone who is known opposition to the practice that they're undertaking. And that's actually kind of a remarkable thing for them to invite me to it. And I don't think that by inviting me to it, they're expecting me to all of a sudden change my mind.
Right.
And I don't think that necessarily by attending it, I'm signaling that I've changed my mind.
Right.
It's possible that I am, and so I need to do personally a lot more work on the question. But
I kind of threw it at you. So this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. On the line, we have Matthew Lee Anderson, who writes at MereOrthodoxy.com. Just getting actually to the topic we originally scheduled to discuss is this article you wrote.
Matthew is thanking you right now.
Yeah. Thank you. I apologize for throwing that curveball at you, but I thought this
sure.
was it was an interesting topic. I think you had some good things to say about it and some food for thought for me even too. So, what makes you said first of all, young evangelicals are being naive. What are they? What's going on with this generation that it seems like, in my mind, and I served in youth ministry for 20 years, and it's still blowing my mind how these kids are they seem to lack discernment when it comes to this issue.
I think it's a complicated story for a lot of younger evangelicals, people who are in their 20s and early 30s,
mm-hmm.
we grew up with this narrative that the religious right had destroyed political activity for evangelical Christians and had subverted the gospel in all sorts of ways. And so we've spent the last decade trying to distance ourselves as much as possible from anything that's associated with the religious right.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't like get rid of that habit overnight.
Right.
The problem is that the religious right, the moral majority, spent a lot of political capital, I think, on things that like were not deeply, fundamentally significant to the social order. Things like even like prayer in schools and Ten Commandments in the courtroom and so on. And what it did was it burnt a lot of capital so that on these issues where we're now, we now need as much capital as we have, we're running a deficit. We don't have it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so the children of the religious right, having raised with that kind of, in that kind of environment, and having heard the inappropriate fear-mongering and so on and so forth for years,
mm-hmm.
now look at the kinds of claims that conservatives are making that I think are entirely reasonable,
right,
and say, oh, you're just continuing that fear-mongering that you've been doing.
Mm. Interesting.
And I don't know a way around it.
Well, forgive me, Matthew, but don't you think, I mean, for me personally, I've never really thought this was all that difficult to understand. Now, notwithstanding, I see some of the things that you're speaking of. I've experienced some of it myself and in my local congregation. But it strikes me that relative to Shane's question earlier, the answer's fairly simple. And I go back to Romans 12:2, and it says, "And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." Well, the young evangelicals are no longer interested in being transformed by the renewing of their minds. They're interested in being conformed to the world. And I grant there's an awful lot of pressure out there right now, especially relative to this issue, that we're supposed to be loving and accepting and all the rest of it. And so in order to be loving and accepting, we're supposed to also turn over our principles with respect to our understanding from Scripture relative to the issue of homosexuality. And anyway, for me personally, I don't think this is all this difficult to understand. I think we've got a generation of evangelicals here that are being conformed to the world. So rebut me if you can on that point.
No, I have no interest in rebutting because I agree with. I think you're right that the witness of Scripture is very clear on this question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's very clear, even. And the arguments that are being presented to destabilize and undermine that position of Scripture, I think, are just not good. Liberal, progressive Christians have been providing arguments on these views for about 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read a lot of them, and I'm still waiting to see one that I think is really knockdown persuasive argument. But the question then becomes, okay, so why are so many young evangelicals becoming persuaded, even to a small degree, by them, such that they no longer think the witness of Scripture is clear?
Right.
And to that answer, I don't think that we can necessarily just look at the young evangelicals as a group, without looking at the kind of formation that they received within the evangelical churches that they grew up in and finding failures there and owning as an evangelical movement the rottenness of the tree that is leading to this bad fruit.
Right.
And so it's a delicate position for me because I am an evangelical. I'm happy being an evangelical. I've defended evangelicals for the past decade in print. And but we have to own the shortcomings,
right,
of what we've done. And we see those shortcomings in the kind of responses to these situations that evangelicalism's children are taking up.
Well, in Iowa in 2009, our Supreme Court struck down our Defense of Marriage Act, and at the time I was an interim pastor in a church down in, south of Des Moines, and I remember saying to the congregation, part of this has been years in coming, and a big part of this is, and I think part of this too is how young evangelicals have seen the church, but it seems like we've only engaged the homosexual community in the political arena. Do you think that's maybe part of our problem?
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of the problem. And what that has meant is that, many young evangelicals have friends who are gay,
mm-hmm.
and their parents don't. And that the absence or the gap of those kinds of encounters growing up left many young evangelicals without any resources to know how to meaningfully disagree and maintain opposition to certain practices that a person engages in while still like being friendly and loving towards the person.
Right.
Right. And so not having those kinds of models with respect to gay people or even like others necessarily,
about 30 seconds left. Matt.
The response has been to, basically just agree with what their friends are doing.
Great. Hey, thank you so much, Matthew. We could go on another segment on this topic.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show,
and
Matthew.
We'll have to have you back sometime soon. This is great. Thanks, Matthew. Check out MirrorOrthodoxy.com. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Is God punishing me? Does he hate me? What did I do to deserve these trials? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Pain and trials are commonly assumed to be signs that you do not have peace with God. Even the famous sufferer in the Bible, Job, endured accusations from his friends that his hardships were punishment from God. Yet the Bible offers several purposes of trials in the life of a believer. One such purpose is that hard times allow us to experience the fullness of God's comfort and grace to the point that we are able to comfort others that are in affliction. The Bible says, "The God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction, with the comfort with which we are ourselves are comforted by God." If you want peace with God, give us a call at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org. That number again, 515-635-5465.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029.
and he can help you find the life insurance you
need.
So, yeah, I about thought Brian was going to hit me in the head while he was playing air drums. But anyway, if you've never seen Brian do air drums, check out Caffeinated Thoughts Facebook page. The video is right there. It is fascinating. So
moving right along.
Moving along, we have we're gonna pick on Hillary Clinton again because it's low hanging fruit and it's just there. And she just makes it so easy.
So after last week I thought we were done with Mrs. Clinton.
I think
for a while.
She's just gonna keep
apparently
providing
not.
Opportunities.
She's the new Mitt Romney.
Right. I promise you that we're not gonna do this every single week. Because even
I don't know,
even,
you probably shouldn't have done that.
Even I would get bored doing that.
You made a promise that you probably shouldn't have made, there, buddy.
Probably. Well, not. I didn't say we wouldn't do it 4 out of 5 weeks. But I think I could. I think
3 out of 4 segments.
I think saying every right. week is probably pretty
okay.
safe. Or saying we won't do it every week. First of all. With the whole email blow up and the MOU, if you recall the MOU that she supposedly signed upon leaving the State Department, the White House surprisingly dodges questions on whether Clinton violated the MOU that was signed by Valerie Jarrett. Check this clip out, clip one, Ron.
Okay, this clip's about 2.5 minutes. So
right,
Hillary Clinton's. Financial dealings, the financial dealings of the foundation and her husband's speaking fees. First of all, can you make that memorandum public? Because I don't think we've ever seen it.
This is a memorandum of understanding that resides at the State Department, so you can ask them about their policy for disclosing it.
Okay, we've asked for that. I'm wondering if you can, I mean, this is, in the interest of transparency, this was supposed to be all about transparency.
Yeah.
Can we see that memorandum?
I think the goal of the memorandum was to ensure that even the appearance of a conflict of interest was avoided by ensuring that there was greater transparency and greater knowledge about the contributions that were being accepted by the Clinton Foundation for the charitable work that they do. That was the goal of the memorandum.
I mean, essentially, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton promised that she would make public the donations to the Clinton Foundation and also speaking fees for President Clinton. Isn't it clear now that Secretary Clinton did not abide by her own memorandum of an understanding with the President?
I'm not sure that that's clear, but you should go ask Secretary Clinton.
Well, I'm asking you because we now read that... Uranium One, foreign company, donated over $2 million to the Clinton Foundation while she was Secretary of State. That would seem to be a pretty clear violation of a memorandum of understanding as it's been explained to us by you.
Well, again, for the details of this transaction, I'd refer you to either the State Department or Secretary Clinton's team. Obviously, that's not something that that was reviewed at this level.
And we also know that previously the $500,000 donation from the Algerian government went to the Clinton Foundation while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Again, isn't this a clear violation of a memorandum of understanding that said that, first of all, there was going to be an end to foreign donations and these donations would donations to the foundation would be made public?
Yeah. Again, I'd refer to Secretary Clinton's team about that.
Can you check in on this as well? I mean, this is an understanding with the president, right?
But you're asking about the compliance with this particular matter and whether it lived up to the standards that Secretary Clinton had set for herself. And so I'd refer you to Secretary Clinton's team to render some judgment on that.
First of all, I made a mistake. This was referring to the foreign donations, not her emails. First of all, I don't know who that reporter was, but I'd love to give him a big hug because he's finally doing what the press should have been doing.
I'm not going to be able to remember
along.
His name, but isn't that the guy from ABC? Is it John Carl? Is that his name?
No, I don't believe it was John
okay.
Carl.
Right.
I don't believe
it
so.
It sounded like his voice. Whoever it was not letting up.
No, but he's
that was
dang,
awesome.
He's doing what he's supposed to be doing,
that's right.
And that's what the press is supposed to do: ask tough questions. And it's humorous but sad to see how the White House just dodges questions like that. But it was a fascinating exchange. But obviously, the most transparent administration is anything but.
Now, was this particular MOU supposed to be signed by Valerie Jarrett? Was this one supposed to be signed?
Yeah.
So don't ask us, even though Valerie Jarrett is a member of our administration. Don't ask us. Go talk to the Clintons or go talk to the State Department. Don't ask us to produce this.
Right, right.
Sheesh.
It's fascinating. Yeah, next clip. I don't know the context to this one. It's other than it's fairly recent. I think this was from an event that Hillary Clinton spoke at in New Hampshire. It was fairly recently, but anyway, we'll just play it. Clip two, Ron.
It's hard to believe that in 2015, so many women still pay a price for being mothers. It is also hard to believe that so many women are still paid less than men for the same work, with even wider gaps for women of color. And if you doubt what I say, look to the World Economic Forum, hardly a hotbed of feminist thought. Their rankings show that the United States is 65th out of 142 nations and other territories on equal pay. Imagine that. We should be number one.
Thoughts on that? My question is, when they talk about the gender gap when it comes to pay, does this take into account, how can you honestly say this unless you're comparing two people with the same amount of experience in the same exact position doing the same exact work? Right?
Well, that's the problem. You wonder, when these statistics are, you know, bandied about, you have to wonder if the qualifiers you just mentioned were actually taken into consideration. Maybe they were. I don't know.
Maybe not. But I just have a hard time seeing this. And when she says, you know, mothers are paying a price. Yeah, kind of. And I'm not saying that to be, you know, a misogynist or anything like that. It's just, some moms do sacrifice for their kids, they take some time off, maybe when they're young, that impacts the amount of experience in the workplace, and that does impact your pay. Now, you know, do moms take that hit if they've never left the workplace? I would suspect not. If they could truly point to a point or a person or an example where there is definitely a disparity of pay, where qualifications are exactly the same and the amount of work is exactly the same and the amount of experience is exactly the same and the woman's getting paid less than the man, then I think they have a case, because then I think that would be unfair. But very rarely do you really have that kind of a matchup. Now, and I'm not saying pay women less. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I just don't see where this gender gap really exists.
Well, and if we're talking about academia, or we're talking about government jobs, really at any level of government.
Yeah. I think it exists in the Obama administration.
It sure does.
Because they've demonstrated that.
But the point I was about to make is that if you have a situation that you just described, where we've got a male candidate and a female candidate, and the qualifications are the same across the board, the female's going to get the job in these other arenas of the workplace because of legislation that's in place promoting that sort of thing.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily saying that's bad. I'm just pointing it out.
Right.
So you wonder how much of this is an across the board kind of a phenomenon.
Right.
Assuming it exists.
Definitely.
And it may well. Just anyway.
Yeah, moving on to clip 19. Hillary Clinton's the champion of women in Saudi Arabia who want to drive.
Or standing up for women in Saudi Arabia who were arrested for daring to drive cars.
or warning before the Arab Spring that the regimes there were going to sink into the sands unless significant reforms were to occur.
That is fascinating, because it seems to me that the Obama administration really fudged the Arab Spring. Go ahead and take credit for that. Yeah.
Things have worked out really well over there, haven't they?
Exactly. You know, as far as her, obviously it's good that she's championing women who, you know, I think equal rights for women needs to be championed in these countries that brutalize women, frankly. I'd like to hear her speak up for Christians who are getting beheaded.
That's exactly what occurred to me.
So
don't we have, you know, bigger fish to fry in terms of issues?
I would say so. I would say so. But yeah, Saudi women should get to drive. But you know what? The president of the United States needs to worry about Americans and religious liberty and things like that. You can still be a beacon of freedom and challenge on these things. But I wouldn't exactly point out that. That's pretty weak, actually, as far as the pedigree goes, you know, when it comes to foreign policy and pushing back on oppressive regimes. Not color me not impressed. Moving on to clip. Number four.
We're going to have to hustle.
Yep.
From my perspective, I want to be sure that we get small businesses starting and growing in America again. We have stalled out. I was very surprised to see that when I began to dig into it, because people were telling me this as I traveled around the country the last 2 years, but I didn't know what they were saying. And it turns out that we're not producing as many small businesses as we used to. And a recent world study said that we are 46th in the world in the difficulty to start a small business. There are lots of issues, and we'll get into some of those, I hope, Dave, and the rest of you as well.
All right, this was in New Hampshire. She was doing a roundtable discussion.
Can I go pound my head on the wall here for a few minutes?
The key phrase is, I didn't know what they were talking about. This just,
Shazam.
Yeah, there's why they asked. The White House was asked about this. We'll just skip that because it's not as. This just shows you how clueless and how out of touch Mrs. Clinton is with mainstream Americans. The fact that she, you know, she had to be told this was going on when this is obvious. Main Street has taken a hit. It's obvious small businesses are struggling, and mostly has to do with the Obama administration.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And Obamacare.
But hey, she was surprised. She must get her. She must have to rely on the same news as, I didn't know about this until I saw it in the news.
Well, you know? And look, everybody in that administration has determined that the weakness of our economy is the new normal. Therefore, it's okay.
Right.
Right. Anyway, let's can we get to this next clip?
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to do it. It's a minute 54.
I think we'll bring this up maybe next segment, because I think it's important to listen to how she says she's not going to add burdens to small businesses. But the thing is, Mrs. Clinton just fundamentally lacks a rapport with your average American. And whether that's going to ding her or not, or if we're going to play identity politics and that's going to help her rise to top, that remains to be seen. But I hope Americans will hear these things coming out of her mouth. Nobody's cajoling her to say stuff like this. She frankly said she didn't know, she didn't understand. I mean, you know, I was kidding about, you know, Obama getting the news. Well, she had to wait till she heard about it from American. Does she not read the news? What the heck? This has been out there. This should not come as a surprise.
Again, in their world, the economy is okay.
Yeah. In their world. That's
their
key,
world.
Key phrase. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
I'm going to go beat my head against the wall a while. Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website, conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint, without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Is God punishing me? Does he hate me? What did I do to deserve these trials? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Pain and trials are commonly assumed to be signs that you do not have peace with God. Even the famous sufferer in the Bible, Job, endured accusations from his friends that his hardships were punishment from God. Yet the Bible offers several purposes of trials in the life of a believer. One such purpose is that hard times allow us to experience the fullness of God's comfort and grace to the point that we are able to comfort others that are in affliction. The Bible says, "The God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction, with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." If you want peace with God, give us a call at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org. That number again, 515-635-5465.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries. Check out Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. We're back to picking the low-hanging fruit, and there's a couple things that I wanted to bring up about Hillary Clinton that we didn't get a chance to last segment. Ron, could you play clip 5? This is Clinton talking about how she's not going to ding small businesses.
But I guess one final question I might ask you is that capital improvements, you know, we like keeping our machines modern and up-to-date, and historically, I think in the last 8 to 10 years, we've been able to write off the capital improvements in the year that they're installed. And now in 2015, they're talking about reducing that to $25,000. And I know that's Congress, but I'm curious as to your feeling. I mean, if you're president, what can you do to help small businesses like ours to improve the equipment that we have not make it so onerous that so that we can spread it out and still do right by the IRS?
Yeah, no, I think that's an important question, and I can assure you that I don't want to make your life any more onerous. I want you to be able to invest in both maintenance and upgrading of existing equipment and, like, that new printing machine you showed me, new equipment, if that's going to make you competitive. I think what we have to do is we have to look at the whole tax system and try to figure out what is an economic investment as opposed to one without economic purpose, because there are a lot of those where people are just basically playing games and, like capital gains was supposed to be, for example, a way to reward people who made risky investments, starting a new business, investing in somebody else's business. And now it's just being churned. And so we have to take a look at the whole tax system. But I can assure you, I would not support anything that makes your business more difficult to run, because you have a real business and you have real economic imperatives.
He has a real business. Oh, I will not do anything that will hurt small businesses. Mrs. Clinton, as senator, did you not vote for Obamacare?
Enough said.
You hear the crickets?
Yeah.
She didn't answer. Did you catch what she said about capital gains?
Yes.
It's pretty clear there that she just has no use at all for a low capital gains tax. That's pretty clear.
I have a suggestion. Let's get rid of capital gains tax altogether.
Let's just
totally simplify the tax code. That will help small businesses. That way we don't play games, and that way we don't make things more onerous for job creators. And frankly, small businesses, that's where the majority of the job creation occurs. So when these folks are taking a ding, this is hurting our economy in a big way. Bigger companies can deal with some of these rules and regulations, and because they have the money to do that. Small businesses can't. It impacts how many people they can hire. Want to also bring up the whole Clinton Cash debacle. Clinton Cash, this is a book that's going to be released here soon, but the New York Times was able to get a sneak peek, and there were basically, they list three, the Times lists three quid pro quo allegations that were included in this book. One is a free trade agreement between U.S. and Colombia that was finalized during Clinton's time at the State Department that surprisingly benefited one of the Clinton Foundation's major donors. The agreement buoyed the donor's investments in Colombian natural resources. The second quid pro quo allegation would be development projects after a devastating earthquake that struck Haiti in 2010. And then the third one the Times brings up is a Canadian bank and top shareholder in the controversial Keystone XL pipeline, which Clinton needed to review, paid Bill Clinton $1 million in speaking fees as the debate over the pipeline was roiling in Congress. So,
well, this is interesting because this is the New York Times listing these things.
Right.
Once again, like Limbaugh says, the random act of journalism that happens.
The old gray lady has awoken.
That's right.
And she's actually doing some real journalism once again. It's amazing.
But again, like we were talking off the air, it's not going to matter. The Democrat Party, if Mrs. Clinton gets the nomination, which it still looks to me to be an inevitability, they're going to vote for her anyway. This doesn't mean anything to them.
But independence, it does.
But she's not going to need them. They prove that. If the turnout looks like it did in 2008 or 2012, they don't need the independence. It's sad, but true.
It'll be interesting to see what the model looks like. If it's going to be a 2008 model, or is it going to be more like what we saw in 2014?
I'm curious what it would take. I mean, how big would the scandal have to be before the left turns its back on Mrs. Clinton? I just don't see it.
Well, I don't think you'll see the left not support her, support somebody else. They're obviously not going to support a Republican candidate. However,
look, they may primary her.
Here's the thing. And this could happen if they are not excited about her. If the progressives, the progressive base of Democrat, liberal, kind of, same thing. If they're not excited about their candidate, I don't think it's that much different than when conservatives aren't excited. They weren't excited about Mitt Romney.
Romney, he sucks.
He sucks. Yeah. I did find a way to sneak that.
We had to get it in.
But, they just didn't turn out. They didn't turn out for him. And that could happen for her, too.
Maybe.
There's a lot of big question marks.
It's just hard.
I'm not sure.
It's hard to say if the Democrats will be able to do the same thing without Barack Obama at the top of the ticket.
Right, and that's a big question mark because he did, will they have the same turnout model? She does not have the charisma that he did. So we'll see. We'll see. Ted Cruz is the guest of two gay businessmen. And far-right conservatives are blowing their mind and liberals are blowing their mind. It's like, what the heck? The New York Times...
Heads are exploding everywhere, folks.
Everywhere. But on Monday, New York Times reports, but on Monday night at a reception for him at the Manhattan apartment of two prominent gay hotel owners, the Texas senator and Republican presidential hopeful struck quite a different tone. Did he really strike a different tone? That remains to be seen. During the gathering, according to two people present, that's not whether this happened or not.
Two people.
They didn't really identify these people. But they said, Mr. Cruz said he would not love his daughters any differently if one of them was gay. How is this controversial? Really? Because we, if my daughter, heaven forbid, if my daughter said she was gay, I would say, first of all, it's not going to change my mind that that's a sin. But she's still my daughter, and I'm going to love her. Hello?
That's good to know.
Yeah. Hello? Hello? This is not controversial.
Well, anyway. It presupposes, that statement that's been written here presupposes that if you're against homosexuality, then you must necessarily,
hate everybody who's gay, including your own sibling or your own children.
There's an unstated premise here.
Right.
I mean, it's the usual stuff.
Anyway.
1 minute
but
left, buddy.
He iterated in this thing that marriage is still a decision that should be left to the states. So, I'm actually glad to see that he's able to connect with people like this. They find issues in which they have some common agreement. That's, whether you like it or not, that's what candidates need to do. That when we're talking about, making our tent bigger, that's not sacrificing your principles. That's just finding areas in which I agree with certain people that, hey, we can discuss this and we can agree on this. And I care about that issue. We might disagree on this other area. We can work together on this.
I'm sure
some people have a problem with that, but that's politics.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of folks on the right that were not a bit happy with all this.
Probably not. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Is God punishing me? Does he hate me? What did I do to deserve these trials? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Pain and trials are commonly assumed to be signs that you do not have peace with God. Even the famous sufferer in the Bible, Job, endured accusations from his friends that his hardships were punishment from God. Yet the Bible offers several purposes of trials in the life of a believer. One such purpose is that hard times allow us to experience the fullness of God's comfort and grace to the point that we are able to comfort others that are in affliction. The Bible says, "The God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction, with the comfort with which we are ourselves are comforted by God." If you want peace with God, give us a call at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org. That number again, 515-635-5465.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is proud to be a co-sponsor of the Practical Federalism Conference. It's going to be occurring on May 16th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Community Choice Credit Union Convention Center in Des Moines. That's a mouthful. I don't know who thought of naming it that, but anyway, that's the old Vets Auditorium, if you're not aware. This is sponsored by American Principles Project, and we're coming alongside as a media partner. But if you want to find out more about the conference and you want to register online, you can go to americanprinciples.org/federalism. Again, that's May 16th, the Practical Federalism Conference from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Hopefully you check it out. They did this in New Hampshire, and it was a great event, so I'm looking forward to it when they come to Iowa.
Cool.
I'm like looking at you. What's next, Brian?
Come in, Shane.
There was one thing before we get into our favorite segment or favorite part of the show. I wanted to bring up just kind of an update to we've talked about on the show, the bullying bill that was passed by the Senate and was being debated in the House. The House Democrats tried to force a vote on Senate File 488, but it failed on a 52-45 vote. So they tried to – I can't remember which rule they tried – it was a House rule they tried to enforce, and it got voted down. So it looks like the bullying bill is going to die in the House.
Bully bill is gone for the moment.
And it sounds like the Democrats tried to bully the Republicans into passing the bullying bill.
So this bill needed to die. So it did. This is a happy moment. Okay. So,
victory for parental rights.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
Okay, this story is from UPI in Colorado Springs, April 24th. A Colorado man was pushed to his limit, took his computer into the back alley, and fired 8 shots into the PC with a 9mm pistol.
I could resonate with that.
Lucas Hinch, 37, admitted to being fully aware of his actions. It was premeditated. Oh, definitely, he told the Los Angeles Times. I made sure there wasn't anything behind it and nothing to ricochet. Before going full Office Space, it must be a movie or something.
It must be.
I haven't seen it. But anyway, before going full Office Space on his computer, Lieutenant Jeff Strassner of Colorado Springs Police Department said, quote, he got tired of fighting with his computer for the last several months, unquote. Hinch is completely comfortable with his life decision. What's a life decision? Yeah. It was glorious, he said. Angels sung on high. The computer is not expected to recover.
Well, I would suppose not. I think, Mr. Hinch, one shot probably would have done the trick.
There is no law on the books regarding machine homicide, but Hinch was charged with discharging a firearm within city limits.
Yeah, dude, you could at least taken it out to the country and do that.
Stuck it in the
then
alley.
You wouldn't have been Boom! Charged. Hey, I totally understand being frustrated. My laptop finally, I mean, it's not completely dead yet, but it took literally 8 hours to upload a YouTube video, and it gummed up my machine.
Oh, dear.
I couldn't do anything with my laptop while that was going on. Carly Fiorina, check out the video, please. It was a labor of love. It took forever to get that video uploaded, so check that on caffeinatedthoughts.com today.
An acquaintance of mine one time had a moment like this. He didn't use his gun. He took the thing out in his driveway and drove over it with his truck.
I've wanted to throw this
capital punishment.
I've wanted to throw my laptop across the room. Instead, I just decided to get a new one. So,
okay.
I'm happy so far. This just happened the other day. So,
our quote of the day is from Robert Louis Stevenson: "Keep your fears to yourself, but share your courage with others." Unless, of course, you're using a 9mm pistol on your computer.
He didn't say that. No. It's Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
See you, everybody.